We get used to a predictable regimen for our artificial lighting for decades. Screw in a new bulb, use it for a while until it blows out, remove it, throw it in the trash, repeat. Most of the steps are the same with compact fluorescent bulbs, or CFLs, which are becoming much more common. The major difference comes in disposal. CFLs contain mercury and are therefore not good candidates for just chucking in the trash headed to the landfill. So let's talk about what to do with these newer lights. Denise Barnes is recycling coordinator at Rogue Disposal and Recycling, also the co-director of the Jackson County Recycling Partnership, and our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange. Denise, thanks for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about CFLs in general. I mean, we're definitely making this transition. I see tungsten bulbs still obviously for sale out there. Is that going to stop after a while?
I'm not sure if it's going to ever go away. And the compact fluorescent bulbs have a longer lifespan. They use less mercury than a standard tube bulb, and they last much longer. So, you know, I think that the tube bulbs are still going to be around for a while. I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon. The incandescents, we may see those disappear.
Right, that's what I was talking about. The incandescents, yeah, then are the ones that are likely to they'll be sunsetting over time. I believe congressional action took care of that, which of course was a major political thing. But that's a different day. So what's the general rule now then for disposal of CFLs, because they do have some mercury in them?
They do have mercury. They have a little bit less than like a standard tube fluorescent bulb, but they still have about 5 to 8 milligrams of mercury vapor in them. And so Rogue Disposal and Recycling has imposed a ban on any kind of fluorescent tubes or bulbs going in our solid waste. So we ask that you recycle them, and there's many ways to do that. You can bring them out to the transfer station, and we charge $1.50 a bulb to recycle them. Valley View Recycling Center and Water Street Depot in the Ashland area accepts 3 from a household at no charge. And I believe Home Depot also accepts compact fluorescents from households at no charge. And I don't know if they have a limit, you know, on what you can bring in. But so there are recycling options readily available.
But there's no issue with the old tungsten bulbs, right? You can just chuck those
out. No,
right,
they have no mercury vapor in them. So the incandescent bulbs don't have any mercury, any hazardous components in them that you have to worry about. But they use a lot more energy to light than a compact fluorescent does.
Interesting. So we've gotten to a period in history when you have to treat your light bulbs, your old CFLs, as something like your car batteries and your
absolutely
and your CRTs and things like that.
Yeah, the Department of Environmental Quality actually put a restriction on fluorescent tube disposal for businesses years ago. They classify it as universal waste, so they don't have to be handled as stringently as hazardous waste. But yet there are hazardous components to the waste. So, but residents have always been exempt from that, except now, you know, back in 2009, Rogue Disposal and Recycling decided that we don't want to expose our employees or our customers to the hazards of the mercury vapor as these bulbs are broken on the transfer station floor or in your garbage can on our garbage trucks. So we imposed our own ban, even though DEQ allows the exemption for you to throw them in the garbage as a household. We ask you not to do that.
Really? So in the state of Oregon, elsewhere, it's okay to chuck a CFL in the light?
A household, not a business, yes. Okay. DEQ regulates households and businesses very differently. Okay. So.
All right, we'll talk about the businesses in just a second. But what for your purposes, for the areas that are served by Rogue Disposal and Recycling, do not stick it in the trash.
Take it
to one of the places you talked about here.
Exactly.
What had been happening? Were you seeing a lot of them in the first few years of CFLs?
Particularly, yes, and particularly in the transfer station. So people come in and dump, you know, 5 bulbs. They just dump it out on their load on the transfer station floor. They all pop and break. And so not only are our employees being exposed to that, our customers are as well. So we imposed our own ban on that in 2009. And now if we see any fluorescent tubes come in a regular load, we direct them to the recycling area. Some people, we charge a 25-cent fee per foot for the linear tubes. So an average 4-foot tube costs $1 to recycle. And some people they balk at that. They don't want to pay the recycling fees for them. But that's the responsible thing to do. It's the right thing to do.
So we got the tubes and the CFLs. Are any of the old ring lights still made or still used?
There are. We do see some of those come in, and we can recycle all of those.
All right, so it doesn't sound like a whole lot of money here, 25 cents a foot for the linears. But you mentioned
minimal.
That the businesses are regulated differently, and those are the ones that are more likely to come in with a tube fluorescent.
Right. They will bring in, sometimes we'll have a schedule, a business will be retrofitting a building or remodeling, and they'll come in with boxes and boxes of fluorescent tubes. And we recycle all of those through ECS Regenesis. They're the same company that recycles our e-waste, computers, television monitors, all of that. So they are a very environmentally sound company, and they refine all of the products here in the United States. So nothing is shipped overseas, all those horrible, you know.
Right, they're big places to stop. Yeah. We've had them in a couple times to talk about that.
Yeah, they're a great company. So all of our tubes are recycled through them.
We are talking about recycling compact fluorescent light bulbs and the longer fluorescent tubes as well with Denise Barnes, the recycling coordinator at Rogue Disposal and Recycling. We can take into a more general discussion of things that can be recycled as well. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. In those old situations where you had the bulbs bursting on the floor of the transfer station, did it have to be handled like a hazmat situation? People come in suits or anything?
Not so much as a hazmat. We do handle it carefully. And for instance, if somebody dropped a big load of fluorescent tubes, we'd immediately wet it down so that any mercury vapor was contained, and then we'd have to sop it up and then contain that waste so it wasn't releasing anything into the environment. So Once the mercury vapor gets to a landfill, it's 99.9% contained. There's really no issue at that point, but it's getting it from point A to point B. Those bulbs almost always break. So recycling them is the best option.
So where do they go through the recycling process?
ECS Regenesis handles them. They have refineries in California and Texas, so I'm not sure which one they utilize for the fluorescent tube and the mercury recovery, but it all stays in the United States.
All right, but are they able to use the mercury again, or is it?
Yeah, the mercury is reclaimed, and also then the glass is also recycled. So it's a great recycling effort. However, the market value for the mercury that is reclaimed is negligible. So that's why it is up to the waste generator to pay those recycling fees. Recycling is not free.
No.
People think it is. It's not.
It's been interesting to learn over recent years about recycling markets and things like that. I mean, is it a constantly shifting landscape for somebody
who's
in the middle of it all?
Very much so. When I run the Master Recycler training program, they get in this training and I warn them. I go, you're going to hear the word markets throughout this 11-week training more than you ever thought you would, because the recycling markets shift constantly. And we're very dependent also on foreign markets. So China, Asia, all of those countries affect what we can recycle here in the United States.
So there's often a mismatch, it sounds like. I'm going to take a wild guess here that you're ordered to recycle some things, but then there's not a place that'll necessarily pay for the products that come out of that recycling.
That's very true. We are mandated by the Department of Environmental Quality to recycle certain things, the standard recyclables, paper, glass, cardboard, plastics, different things. But the law doesn't guarantee we have a place to take those. So when the markets take a downturn, we stockpile. It's illegal for us to throw away recyclables that we collect for recycling. So if the markets take a downturn and we have it's very slow to move the material, we stockpile it until we can move it.
And that requires some warehouse space then.
It requires warehouse space. And yeah, our facilities get full. And then if it gets to an unsafe capacity, fire hazard, that type of thing, we rent warehouse space. Exactly right.
Really? And are you renting warehouse space now?
Yeah, we do have some up in Portland right now that we're starting finally to move material quicker. When China Green Fence went up a year ago in February, it slowed everything down. Things were moving, but it was very slow. They were inspecting loads. They were making sure that the material they were receiving was actually what was in that shipping container, that it wasn't backloaded with garbage. So they did the right thing. They were doing the right thing by making sure that they were importing actual commodities and not garbage, but it slowed everything down. And so we're just starting to recover from that. Things are moving. It's just a little slower.
So green fence is an interesting term, but it's a descriptive one. I mean, what did China just basically say, no, you're not going to dump stuff over
exactly. there? Exactly. They're actually enforcing rules that they had in place that they weren't really enforcing before. And they started inspecting the loads that were coming in and verifying that the commodities coming in were what they said they were. And they're continuing to do that. So it slowed the movement down, but it's still moving, and it's a good thing. They did the right thing.
So it's good to know, though, that you're banned by law from taking things that you're collected
Absolutely.
Through recycling and turning around and going, oh, well, nobody's going to buy them off to the landfill. Does not happen.
Does not happen.
What are some of the trends that I noticed? That there was a talk of several years ago with paper in particular, with newspapers about people just collecting so much of it and not being able to do much with it. Is that still an issue?
No, paper is one of the things we've always had pretty ease of moving the commodities. So cardboard and newsprint has always had an easier outlet than, say, plastics. Plastics are a challenge. Paper, we've always been able to find markets for. We have some paper mills here, right here in Oregon, that most of our corrugated cardboard and our newsprint go to. So we've not had too much problem moving paper. We have seen our volume of newspaper go down. Our tonnage has gone down over the years because a lot of people are reading stuff online, so they're not subscribing to the newspaper. So we've seen our newspaper tonnages drop in the last few years.
And then, so what are the other things that, I mean, glass, for example, where does glass go?
Glass goes, Rogue Disposal and Recycling is unique in the fact that we actually commingle our glass with our other commodities. So the glass goes right into the sort facility with all the other commodities and gets sorted out. They have special equipment that can take the glass out of the commingle. And then it usually goes to a company that will turn it into glass beading on a highway. So the reflective beading that you see might be recycled glass. Insulation. Other glass products like decorative tiles, things like that. It usually doesn't go back into a food product container, but usually some other glass product. And it's working out very well. Our glass recycling is doing really well. Another beneficial use for glass that is approved by the Department of Environmental Quality is we can use it as aggregate at the landfill. So we can crush it and use it like basically like rock when we're lining our pipe trenches and things like that in the landfill, our gas collection pipes and stuff. And that is a DEQ approved use of glass, a reuse of glass.
Denise Barnes, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Recycling Coordinator for Rogue Disposal and Recycling. We started out talking about compact fluorescent bulbs. We're going a little farther afield now. Join us if you want to talk about recycling here on the Exchange. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Should point out that Denise is also the co-director of the Jackson County Recycling Partnership and the Master Recycler Program, mm-hmm. which raises the question, and the Master Recycler Program is once a year, is that right?
We do one training per year. It starts in usually the first week in March, and we don't have the dates yet for the 2015 training, but it spans 11 weeks. We usually take a week off, so there's 10 weeks of training. There's field trips. We go see the landfill, mm-hmm. which the public usually doesn't have access to, so it's kind of a special thing to go tour the landfill, and we also tour the water treatment facility and maybe some other composting or sustainable farms. So it's a very comprehensive training all about waste reduction, reuse, composting, and just the solid waste infrastructure in Jackson County, because it's different everywhere. Jackson County is somewhat unique, so they learn about how we do things here and why.
Is it just based, I mean, unique because of what the procedures are at Rogue Disposal and what they are under state law?
Yeah, it's unique because we're in a franchise solid waste system, so you have different waste haulers that have designated service areas, which that's not always the case if you travel around the state. We're also unique in the fact we have a regional landfill, and it is a regional landfill. Every little town doesn't have their own dumps anymore, so it's unique in that aspect that we don't have to truck our garbage hundreds of miles like other people do. And we're probably as far away from any recycled markets as you can get here in Southern Oregon. So whether we're going to California or up north, we have to haul our recycling commodities hundreds of miles. And so we face unique challenges. We also have a lot of rural area that we have to collect in. And again, unique challenges in that respect.
So you're covering a lot of distance just to bring this stuff in the first
yes.
place. And then once it's all packaged up and to be sent someplace else,
yeah.
you got to cover a lot of distance there too.
Yeah.
So your transportation costs, your fuel, certainly,
yes.
very high to begin with.
Yeah.
I have to believe that, and the reason I was asking about the Master Recycler Program, I'm trying hard not to call it Master Gardener, but the Master Recycler Program must be very different year to year then. I mean, what you're going to teach in March of next year could be strikingly different from what you taught
Absolutely.
In March of this year.
Absolutely, because again, the markets are changing. What we can accept changes. You know, we educate them on plastic recycling, and then the plastics that we can accept change. So it does change every year, and we also try to keep it fresh, so that past master recyclers, the veterans that have been through the training, want to come back and hear a new speaker. So we try to offer some new speakers each year. We bring people down all the way from Portland, and then we have our local experts as well. So we try to mix up the syllabus every year, so we are attracting the veteran master recyclers to come back and sit in on a couple classes or join us on a field trip. So,
do they get certification as master recyclers?
They do. If they give back 40 service hours to our community in the areas of waste prevention, reuse, composting, you know, outreach and education, event recycling, they give back 40 service hours to our community, then they get certified. So if they don't complete those 40 service hours, they just get a certificate of completion. But if they complete those 40 service hours, they get an actual become a certified master recycler, and once a master recycler, always a master recycler.
So the certification holds even though the training may be very different?
It does hold. If they get recertified, if they get 10 hours of outreach and education service within a calendar year, they get recertified. So we try to keep them engaged and keep, once they go through the training, we want to keep them coming back and have those veterans to be leaders and the mentors to the new classes. So.
I'm circling back around to light bulbs here. We have an email from Grumpy John in Grants Pass. He says, of this compact fluorescence, why are they even continuing to make them? The LED bulbs are so much more efficient, are dimmable. You can get 2,700 Kelvin available, nice light. It's a very pretty kind
good
of light.
Question.
That refers to the color temperature. And I asked you before we got on here about LEDs, and you said it's still something you're kind of getting used to.
Yeah, because I'm on the waste end of it, so we deal with them after their life cycle. So we haven't LEDs do last a long time, so we haven't have to deal with a lot of end of life LED light fixtures. So we're not dealing with them as much, and I'm not sure what the energy component is of LEDs. I know that incandescents use 3 to 4 times more energy than mercury, and the lamp industry is. Been challenged to find something that is works as efficient as mercury. So I'm not sure people aren't using as many because they're more cost prohibitive. I don't know that much about LEDs, but we haven't dealt with them that much in the waste industry yet. It's one of those things that will cycle through. When they start hitting the end of their life, then we'll start dealing with them.
Have you got any flyers or information sent out about these or what to watch out for in LED? Do they have any hazardous substances in them?
I've heard, yes, that they do, but I don't know that much about them. I agree. I think that they are very efficient. They last a long time. They're a cooler light. They don't emit as much heat, so they are a good option.
And as from what I understand, too, and what John is talking about here is that they do come in color temperatures that make them somewhat more pleasing than that rather cold blue stare you get from some LED headlights. So, yes, those are coming along as well. I'm going to have to have you back at some point when we're up to speed on
exactly.
LED.
Then we'll have an LED session. But I would still say that when they do hit the end of their life, it's something that can be recycled. They don't have to be thrown in the trash.
All right. Well, and look at for any of these packages too. You can look right on it when you buy it and see what it says about the disposal instructions. B just goes by B, one letter, and Ashland wants to know, what new things do you take to the recycling that you didn't take before?
It's, you know, we're very slow to add new commodities, again, because there has to be a long-term stable market for them. We can't just say, there's a market for sheetrock now. There's a sheetrock recycler in town, and then he's gone 6 months from now. So we don't want to start taking and accepting commodities unless we know we have a stable long-term market. The most recent addition to our commingle was when we started collecting the plastic tubs, like butter tubs and yogurt tubs. And again, that market is still very low value or no value. but, you know, it is something that we found that there is a stable market for it. So we added that a couple years ago to our commingle stream. We don't add commodities very often.
And that'll be different from town to town, though, because where you're Rogue Disposal, you're part of one company, and then you got Ashland Sanitary, which is part of Recology now, is a different company.
Right, and they market their commodities through different outlets. And so they may not have the same list of acceptable items as we do, because maybe our processor says, yes, we'll accept glass in your commingle. Theirs says, no, we don't want glass, and we don't have the equipment to sort the glass. So, yeah, you have to know what is on the acceptable list for your hauler, for your collector company, because it is different from just from city to city.
And know how it's separated as well, because I remember years ago having to set the stuff in different paper bags within the recycle.
Yeah, that was the good old source separated days, and we tried to make it easier for you by going to commingle, and we found that commingle is easier, more people do recycle, and our tonnages are up. So commingle's working.
And what are the rates like? I have to believe as the co-director of the Jackson County Recycling Partnership, you have some figures that would be countywide. I mean, what are the rates? Are more people recycling over time? Is it something people just do?
Yes, because I've been in this industry a long time. And, you know, years ago in the early 90s, people, when we did started the store separated, they're like, I have to do what? You want me to flatten my cardboard and tie this and put the... And then now they're like, why don't you recycle more? I want to recycle more. So I've seen people's attitudes shift from it being a hassle to being a norm, and they want to do more, which is fantastic. And they are. Jackson County is doing amazingly well. We get a report card from the state every year. We have to report all our tonnages and do a lot of reporting. And Jackson County is enjoying a recovery rate of about 47%. So about 47% of all the waste generated in Jackson County is being recovered either by recycling composting or energy recovery, which like biomass would be part of that figure. So we're doing really well in Jackson County. Again, it's market dependent, and it's the economy plays into it. So when the economy is down, there's less building going on. People aren't shopping as much. So we also see the tonnage of waste going to the landfill go down. That's crucial to making the recovery numbers go up. So it's a combination of things that allow us to enjoy that such a nice recovery rate. So it's it changes every year depending on the economy and the recycling markets.
Is there a national recovery rate? How does that?
I don't know what the national rate is. The state of because I don't think that every state measures it. Mm-hmm. The state of Oregon does measure it, and the state of Oregon's at about 52%.
Okay, so Rogue Valley, yeah, close within striking.
We're doing very good again from being so far from the recycling markets. That's an amazing recovery rate.
I have to admit to being occasionally puzzled about what to do with certain things. Like, well, look, it's a paper envelope. Therefore, it goes in recycling. But it's lined with plastic bubbles. So now what do I do?
Yeah, that is so true. That is such a good analogy, because anything that's mixed commodities where you have paper and plastic and layers, anything that's mixed is very hard to recycle. So I would say when in doubt, throw it out. That's the best word of advice I can give you.
All right, but recycling rates coming up all the time. Good to know, and good to know about what to do with the CFLs over time. We'll have you back at some point. There's always much to talk about recycling.
Always. I love it. Thank you.
Denise Barnes is Recycling Coordinator for Rogue Disposal and Recycling, serving the Rogue Valley. Also the co-director of the Jackson County Recycling Partnership and the Master Recycler Program. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That'll do it for this hour of The Exchange. Hour number two, we'll talk to Barbara Oakley about how she got from being a linguist to an engineer. Her book is A Mind for Numbers, with tips for us.